Good morning and welcome to Jump in Tucson on this Monday morning. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. You know, Jump in Tucson's Monday theme is Wonder, where we celebrate the good things going on at the University of Arizona, including student projects, student learning, course student outcomes, as well as top-level performances by artists and athletes, and especially top-tier research going on with faculty and scientists at the University of Arizona. One of those things that we celebrate is good people who have been at the U of A for some time, who are doing great work every single day, and one of those is with us today, and that is Nicole Cox. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, Ed. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on Jump in Tucson. This is so exciting.
It's so great to have you here. Your voice, for those people that know radio for the last few years, recognize your voice. You have been on the radio for quite a long time here in Tucson, right?
I believe it's been about 25 years.
That's amazing. You have a fantastic golden tones. My father, as you know, was a radio guy for many years. I guess about 70 years he was a radio guy, started at KHJ in Hollywood. He often commented about what a nice tonal voice that you had, and that's a good compliment from a guy named Gene, so that's good.
That is amazing.
So,
thank
Nicole, you. You are the program director at AZPM, the radio side, KUAT, and people have heard your voice. I actually woke up with you every morning for many years. That's an analogy because she she was the morning host of all the things on KUAT in the morning, and I'm an avid listener of NPR. But you switched to afternoons recently, and we'll talk about that. But you've been at AZPM and KUAT for quite some time now and been doing great.
I have been here for... I've been at Arizona Public Media for just about 8 years. I'm on the KUAZ side, which is the NPR side, where I did host Morning Edition for many years. And then just recently, I made the switch to All Things Considered, and then KUAT, our classical side. Of course, we have as well as the BBC on HD1, and HD2 is our jazz station.
Right.
Yeah.
And you've been in radio for a while. You got your start. Tell us how you got your start and how you got into radio and why you got into radio.
Well, how far back do you want to go, Ed? I mean, if you want to be technical, I did some radio in high school and college, but professionally, the first time I did radio was here in Tucson, and that was over at KNST, and that was part-time on the weekends.
Right. That's where Bill and I got our start. Bill and I were both, we were at KNST, and back in the days of Bob Lee and doing the news and so forth, and that was back in 78, 79, in that time frame. So that's when we first got our, and that's, you were back there in those time frames too, yeah.
Well, that was 1996, I believe, over at KNST, Saturdays. And then, of course, they would sometimes have me work overnights. So I remember working at the opera during the day and then helping run Art Bell overnights and Jim Bohannon show. And, you know, just a lot of wonderful activity going on. Yeah. But, yeah, and then after that, because I was under Pat Porter, who was the program director at the time, when he moved to 1330, I ended up getting a job at 1330 The Jolt when Pat Porter was program director over there. And that was a wonderful experience as well. And I was there for a very long time as well.
When you were over there, you kind of got hooked up with Fred Imus and Don Collier, and they became friends. And that blossomed into a good friendships over the years, right?
That was wonderful. Back in, I think it was 2003... was when first Ed came, excuse me, when first Fred came to Tucson, and we started doing a radio show locally. Mm-hmm. It was out west with Fred Imus and Don Collier and Nicole Cox, and that went on for years, and then after that we were picked up by Sirius XM's Outlaw Country, where we didn't do quite the same show. It was more of a comedy variety show with country music.
Right. Both Fred and Don are gone now, but
they are.
Yeah,
they
are. Don was just a couple years ago, I think, fairly recently, and of course Don's gone now too, so his brother Don Imus is gone as well. So,
yeah.
Speaking of another person that you had some time with, that's John C. Scott.
I know. I worked with him over at The Jolt. He was an amazing boss. I loved him so much. Him and Amy. I loved his whole family.
We were at his services together at the Loft when they did that. And, you know, I just have to, people keep asking me, you know, they hear John C. Scott's voice on the Guinness commercial. And an interesting little story there, when John was doing the radio show here, I was on it, you know, 50 times. And so he would, during the week, call me up and say, "What are you doing for lunch?" And I, "Oh, I don't know. Meet me at Ganey's." So I'd go over there and he'd sit down, and, you know, he'd been there a lot. They'd been friends for 30, 40 years. And, you know, he'd order his food. Then he'd take food when Amy was alive. He'd take food home for Amy. And then later on in his later years, he would, The week he died, I had a great 2-hour lunch with him where he went all the way back to his high school days and kind of did a retrospective of his entire life on a Tuesday, and on a Friday he passed. So, but I did want to mention that after he passed, I asked Coralie, the owner of Guinea's, if she wanted to continue advertising and be on Jumpin' Tucson, and she said yes. And I said, would you mind if we use John's voice? And she said, that'd be great. So I called Mark, his son, and said, hey, Mark, would you mind? And he said, I would be honored to have my dad's voice on your show. So that's why when people hear John's voice, it's purposeful. We did that for a reason.
Oh,
so.
He loved Guinea's. And yeah. I was in the studio a little bit chatting with Matt, and I heard his spot come on, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's so wonderful to hear his voice again.
All right. Well, you've been over at KUAS, KUAZ, KUAT, whatever it is. Yeah. I always call it KUAT because back in the 60s, it was KUAT TV, KUAT AM, KUAT FM. You've been over there now for 8 years, and you're now the radio program director, correct?
Correct. For the first 6 years, I was the, oh, no, that's not right, four, 5 years, I was a morning host,
right.
And then I moved on to coordinator of radio operations, and then for the past year, I've been the radio program director.
Well, congratulations on moving up in the world, that's great, and it's lovely to hear your voice on the radio in the afternoons now. I've been, quite frankly, not listening to you in the morning, because I monitor a jump in Tucson, so I've been listening.
Completely understandable.
I've been listening to Ted and Tom and Grant do their stories and the stories of success that they're doing. So I haven't listened to you a lot, but now I get to pick you up in the afternoons, which is kind of nice. So when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about the cool things that are happening at AZPM and the future and what the future might look for NPR and PBS in Tucson and your affiliation there. And the new home that you're going to have shortly here. I see the bricks and mortar have pretty much been completed, or getting there anyways, and you're going to have an interesting new home over there. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk a little bit more about your life at being a radio host and so forth. It's kind of fun, isn't it, to be on the radio?
I love radio. I love being on the air, and I love working behind the scenes as well. So,
do you get to do any commercial work, or because you're on the air, you don't know?
We do funding credits. We're non-commercial, so I'll do funding credits that air on PBS, but not...
Are you allowed to do other stations and do voice work for other stations, or was that outside the realm of what you can do?
I think that would probably be something I would shy away from.
Right.
Yeah.
Your voice is so recognizable. People would know it's you, yeah. Well, we'll be back after the break. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. We're talking with Nicole Cox from Arizona AZPM, Arizona Public Radio, and we'll come back and talk about the new and exciting things happening of AZPM and the radio station. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson, the wonder version of celebrating the fantastic things going on at the University of Arizona. And one of those wonderful things that happens at the U of A every day, Monday through Friday, is Nicole Cox, who is the program director of KUAZ Radio. And she is an on-air personality, but she's also the program director. Welcome back, Nicole.
Thank you, Ed. And also KUAT.
Right.
That is the classical side,
yeah.
Absolutely. Right. And there's the BBC, and then their jazz station, HD2. Yeah.
That was a nice classical intro that Matt did
for us.
That
was lovely, Matt. Thank you. I feel at home.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, Nicole, you've been at the radio station on campus for years. You've been in the basement of the Modern Languages building. They've been there since Bill and I went to school there back in the 70s, back in the days when Frank Borecka was there and other people. It's been an interesting transformation of that facility over the years, but there's some exciting plans happening for the whole AZPM family is going somewhere else. So.
Absolutely. Beams are up. Concrete is being poured for the new Baker Center for Arizona Public Media. And we're very excited that project is underway. There are a lot of areas in which AZPM wants to grow and look forward to the future. Where do we want to be 10 years from now, 20 years from now? How can we better serve the community in that time period? And I feel that some of the growth with this new building and the facility and we'll be able to do will accommodate so much of that. I guess a side story, Peter Dugan from the Top reached out back in January and they said, hey, we want to do a program in Tucson featuring Arizona teens, talent.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, can we record at your studio? And I said, I'm sorry, we don't have room for a piano, you know, a grand piano in here. I had to tell them to go someplace else to record. We still interviewed them and promoted the program, which was featuring Arizona talent. But at the new building, there will be a performance space. There'll be places for gatherings. We could do live shows such as Arizona Spotlight Live or Live with the Buzz, you know. And I think it's just going to be an area that people can come. It'll be a destination to better serve the community and the growth of where we want to be in the future. Well, radio will be in the future.
Right. So it's the location of that is off campus. It's over on
the bridges. The tech bridges. Part of the bridges.
Right. So it's on the northeast corner of that property, right? You see the building going up there, kind of in that area.
And the skin, I guess, is, well, right now the beams are up and the concrete is being poured. And one of the cool parts about this is you said you've been to the basement and the sub-basement of the Modern Languages building. And some of those areas are not exactly soundproof.
Right.
So one of the interesting things we're doing with the new facility is the way they're laying the concrete and the layers, they're basically going to be making the radio booths kind of isolated acoustic boxes that will allow for just an amazing quality to come through when recording or doing live interviews or hosting.
That's pretty interesting that that's what Matt has in his in his he's soundproof back there. No one can hear him. He's in a bomb shelter. So
and it's nice. It's nice.
Right, Matt, you're back there where no one can hear you, right?
Absolutely.
You can't
probably
hear anything going
for
on
good
the
reason. Yes.
Yeah. And you can't go on in the nothing. You don't hear anything in the hallways or anything. So
well, when I was back there with Matt, I was laughing and I caught myself laughing very loudly. I've known Matt for a long time and I kind of looked over saying, "Oh my goodness, are we being too loud?" But now I guess we're okay.
Yeah, we're okay.
Okay.
Well, that's great. So that facility is in its way, and so you'll be transferring the operations. When is the target for moving the stations over? Would that be in the spring, probably, is when it'll all be finished eventually? Because all the equipment's got to be moved and put. Well, actually, no equipment is being moved. They're putting all brand new equipment in, so it's going to be a new facility. So,
but there's still going to be a certain transfer process where we may start with certain offices, and then all of a sudden we kind of trickle in with more of the radio operations and the TV operations and things like that.
Yeah, I think radio goes first because it's easier to transfer the radio than it is the TV side of things. So,
potentially, depending on the planning, but to the best of my understanding, we get the keys in the fall of 25.
Right. So, well, that'll be your 10th anniversary will be coming up at that time. So that's a great 10th anniversary present for
that's
you
right.
to give you a new facility.
Surprise. Yeah. I know. They did that just for me. Can you believe it? And that was so thoughtful of them.
That was so thoughtful of them.
And thank you for your support.
Well, you know, I have just to be quite honest with you, I use NPR kind of like I use the New York Times when I want to go in depth on subjects and so forth. I listen to NPR and you guys because it's kind of like going, the stories are not just headlines, they're in depth. And that. So to me, it's an important service that the U of A provides, you know, and we end up in Phoenix and some of the other NPR stations across the country are affiliated with universities like we are here. So that's an important marriage between NPR and the U of A and AZPM, right?
It really is. I mean, the community service, the education, the information, the outreach, the connection with the community is all very important, not only to my department, to the news department, to multiple departments. But I have to also say, this is actually something that we're doing new in radio. And even though we are going to be moving off the main campus when we do move, one of the wonderful parts about being associated with the university is the student employees.
Oh, absolutely.
And I tell you, right now, we have three phenomenal ones, specifically in radio. We have Fiona Sievert, Sophia Hammer, Dane Carton, and they are learning and growing. I mean, obviously, they bring so much to the table with their capabilities, but the things that, because they are so capable, we are able to show them how to do and increase their education. And Fiona is an anthropology major. She may not go into radio, but boy, what a thing to have on your resume that you were, you know, editing Hollywood at Home with Victoria Lucas and Andrea Kennedy, or Sophia Hammer was involved in Morris Robinson's interview with Andy Bade. You know, he was a football star turned opera singer. So these are just some wonderful opportunities that we get to experience their creativity and knowledge and their fresh perspective that they bring to the table. And then we get to have this wonderful connection with students. And I'm so grateful for that. And that's new. That's less than a year that we've been able to do that.
Yeah, we had Studio C when I was there, was down in the basement. And we actually went into Studio C as students in the Fine Arts Department, radio and television at the time. And so there was a, as part of the basement down there, there was a little studio that we got hands-on training in, you know, using the big cameras and the audio and lighting and all that kind of stuff. And it's continued over the last 40, 50 years of students being engaged in that process. And that is really an important part of what the service that the station does. So the future looks bright for you. What's on the horizon for AZPM and KUAZ and KUAT, classical station and so forth, as a radio programmer? What do you try to do? What are you trying to offer to listeners?
You know, that's a really great question. And I've been program director for just about a year now, just under a year. And some of the things that have grown in my department, I am truly excited about. We've been growing our classical extempore series. Not only has Andy Bade been interviewing a variety of people, now J.D. Smith is interviewing people. I believe Catalina United Methodist Church has an upcoming In From the Heat organ festival coming up, and we're able to talk to the performer, and they're going to be giving us the audio that we can feature during our community concerts. We're expanding our community concerts, the extempore series. We have a new feature, Hollywood at Home for Radio, right, which promotes
Victoria,
what...
Victoria. Uh-huh.
Yes, with Victoria and Andrea. And that's wonderful on Friday evenings, right after the PBS NewsHour and the radio on KUAZ, the NPR side. And then, of course, we have a statewide news broadcast now. That's a collaboration between all of the NPR stations across the state. So, I mean, I am excited at all the growth and creativity that's happening in my department, and I just feel that with this new building, we can expand upon what we can do and what creative ideas we can even entertain 2 years from now, 3 years from now, having people come in to do live performances, playing that back during our community concerts, you know, doing the Buzz Live, Arizona Spotlight Live. I am excited at the prospect of the doors that are opening for my team.
Right. Although I personally listen to you and listen to the NPR side of things most, I every once in a while tune over to the classical just to relax and to enjoy something. And thank you on behalf of my brother, the Tucson Arizona Boys Chorus, during the Christmas season. You typically run one of their, or several of their Christmas concerts in its entirety, and that's a nice, wonderful thing that you do.
And they are amazing, and they're wonderful, and maybe we can loop them into our community concert series this holiday season.
We would love that, yeah.
James Reel, who is our program director over on classical, does a phenomenal job, also preparing a lot of the scripts for those community concerts.
Right.
And he just is a walking encyclopedia of knowledge, and I know he would enjoy having more with the boys' chorus.
Yeah,
on
they're working on coming back from a summer trip to China. So they've my brother, who's the director, bringing back a group of young men from China, doing that experience. So that's one of the great things, the community outreach that you do. Just think of the hundreds and hundreds of performances available on U of A campus with Arizona Arts Live, with the students at the Fine Arts Department, and all over campus, of how in the new facility, how you'll be able to feature some of those.
Absolutely.
That'll be great. Well, Nicole, it's been great to talk with you. You have such a wonderful voice. Again, I compliment you on your tenure at NPR and KUAZ and KUAT and the good work you're doing as program director there.
Thank you, Ed. Yeah. It was so nice of you to have me on the program today. It was very thoughtful. I enjoyed myself.
I was listening the other day and I heard your voice and I said, I want to invite Nicole on. It would be great to have her on and talk about what we're doing. And it's nice that you're on in the afternoons now so that you can make it up here. So this may not be your last time here. We'll probably invite you back, and when we get the center up and going. And
just to let you know, just a little bit more about the capital campaign, if I may.
Sure.
We would love to have everyone's support. We are about 85-86% there, but we would love to get there. May I give the website?
Absolutely.
If people would like to find out more about the Baker Center for Arizona Public Media, they can visit azpm.org/give, or they can give us a call to show their support at 1-800-223-7192.
That's
Thank
spoken
you,
just like a KUAZ break during pledge week. So you did that really well, and I'm sure our listeners will support you and the whole project there with KUAZ and Arizona Public Media. So thank you, Nicole. You're fantastic. Oh, we appreciate you being here. We'll have you back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson with one of our fun guests, Nicole Cox, on the Wonder Series of celebrating the University of Arizona on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. Thanks for being here, Nicole.
Thank you, Ed.
Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Wonder Edition, where on Mondays we talk about the wonderful things going on at the University of Arizona, including student success and student outcomes. We talk about top-level performances by U of A artists and athletes, and we talk about top-tier research going on with faculty and scientists at the University of Arizona. You know, the University of Arizona has a rich history of wonderful engagement with the community over the years, and one of those things is the rich tradition of the Native peoples and the Native lands, and we have a really robust program at the University of Arizona. One of the people that helps direct that is Dr. Sheila Nichols. Welcome and good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, I like that. Thank you for being here. We were having a little discussion about you and how you got to the University of Arizona. Do you want to share a little bit about your journey of where you were born and how you kind of made it as a full professor and a doctor at the University of Arizona?
Okay. I am a Hopi Sino. I was born into Hopi, and which the culture and the language, in a hospital and in a community, a federal community on the reservation called Kimas Canyon. But I'm from the village of Songopavi, which is on Second Mesa, and grew up there for part of my childhood. But then my mother and I moved with my father down to his village in the village of Kikotsmovi at the base of Third Mesa. And that's where most of my childhood was. And I attended in those days, we didn't have school until you went to first grade.
Right.
So at that time, my parents, being boarding school survivors, decided that they didn't want me to go there. So at the time, there was a Mennonite-operated school called the Mission School on the outskirts of Kikotsmovi Village, where they enrolled me there. And the interesting thing is that unlike the boarding school, it was a fee required. So my parents actually paid a fee for me to go there as well. Of course, it had some of the religious overtones
right.
to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I started school there in first grade and went through third grade. Didn't finish it because at that time, for economic reasons, my parents decided that they needed to move to the border town or to the city or to town, let's put it that way. And we had the choice of Flagstaff or Winslow, but they went to Winslow, which is about 60 miles away from the reservation. And that's when I entered public school and pretty much stayed in the public school system ever since. I did spend my childhood a lot with my grandmother. And so my father's mother. So I have a lot of amazing memories, and I, you know, constantly in the work that I do now, reflect on those times growing up with a large extended family, ceremonies, going out into the cornfields, going to the sheep camp, and I guess always immersed in the language, but not realizing that, you know, that we had something called the Hopi language, which we call today Hopi Lava'i. And then, you know, pretty much that kind of living and way of life was very much impacted because we moved to town. And my parents worked. My dad was a salesman for the 7-Up Bottling Company at first, and then it became the Coca-Cola Bottling Company. My mom worked in, you know, jobs until she finally was able to get training enough to become a cook, and did a lot of cooking in the BIE facility there. Mm-hmm. It's a dormitory where students from the reservations were brought into town and housed there in that dormitory. It was a federal facility, and they attended public schools. So we were a population, you know, attending these public schools there. And I'm, in terms of how did I get into academia.
Right.
I guess in many ways, I don't remember my parents ever, well, they didn't go further than, you know, their high school years and boarding school. But some or other, it was planted. And I think it might be, when I reflect back, it was probably during junior high school when I really became an avid reader. And I felt like I traveled, you know, through the books that I read. And that's what I wanted to do, was I wanted to travel. And my parents always, in the Hopi culture, it's about parents observing their children and supporting and kind of wondering, you know, in what direction is your child going? and supporting that in every way, encouraging, not, you know, directing them and saying that this is what you should do. So I talked about that, I believe, a lot with them, and they said, "You're sure, you know, if that's what you want to do." And of course, they were unable to really help guide me. So in terms of pursuing that, I guess, that dream, I found out about the Peace Corps. Somehow in that area of junior high, it became sort of the goal setting that I did. If I was going to travel, I didn't have any money, but I could go into the Peace Corps and do that. So that's really what took me through high school in terms of doing well academically. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we have the statistics still ongoing that Native American students usually are at the bottom at the academic achievement statistics. But I also managed to become friends with students who are very much academic oriented. So I, you know, that was my peer group, and we all graduated. Interestingly enough, I did well enough to be accepted into the University of Arizona. And it's ironic because it's the only college that I applied to, because I didn't want to go to Northern Arizona University. Right. It was too close to home.
Right.
And it was the farthest away in the state of Arizona. Mm-hmm. So I only applied to one and got accepted. It was not easy because during the times that I was pursuing school, high school in particular, I would say that the times, there were very much racial issues, mm-hmm. prejudice issues, especially in the border town,
right?
Like Winslow. So I did not get very much guidance whatsoever by the academic advisors. I was even told, because I managed to earn one scholarship, very small, but I was told by one of my teachers, my homeroom teacher, who received the award notice for me, that I wasn't cut out to be an academic, that, you know, she didn't understand how I received this award.
Wow.
That was pretty pronounced, the prejudice and against Native students. Mm-hmm. That I felt it a lot. Mm-hmm. So I pretty much stayed with my peer group more than anything, but right. I said, I want to join the Peace Corps.
Absolutely.
So I knew I had to go to college, and so I came to the University of Arizona, and I had always wanted to work with children. And so at that time, there was a program called Candy Stripers. And it seemed like the only options I really had were big ones. Like, I could become a doctor, I could become a nurse, or I could become a secretary. Though I felt like those were the only three career options that I had. I did really well in the secretarial courses because I felt like if I needed a job, I could get a job there,
right?
But it was not what I wanted to do, and I really disappointed my business teacher because I didn't apply for any right. of those kind of academic post-secondary kind of journey or colleges or opportunities. So I thought, well, okay, nursing. And my mother was working already as a nurse's aide in that area, so I was kind of familiar with some of the people. And I became a candy striper my freshman year in high school, and pretty much did that all through high school. And, you know, pretty honed in on the fact that I wanted to help, you know, people. But I realized that I was not nurse material, but I could work with children.
Right.
And in particular, children who were disabled. So physical therapy was my first choice.
When we come back after the break, we'll talk about how you got launched into your academic career at the University of Arizona, and then we'll talk briefly about the new program that's been funded and the Native American, getting people to remember the Hopi language and the Tohono-O'odham language and how to keep that alive. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. Thank you, Matt Neely, for that intro. That's great. We're speaking with Sheila Nicholas, who is with the University of Arizona, and you were telling us that your journey to become a doctor and a professor at the University of Arizona. Tell us how that all kind of came about and how you are now in charge of a few things down there.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I came to I graduated from Winslow High School and came down. And it's noted really for a good college preparatory high school at the time. And I'm not sure about what it is today, but it did prepare me well. I entered into the special ed field as an undergrad study program, and did a lot of work in that area. So my undergrad degree is in special education. And I really think today that was an amazing foundation for what I do now with languages. Mm-hmm. It taught me a lot about how to look at young people, learners who, from a very asset-based perspective, you know, what strengths do they bring and how do we nurture that and cultivate that? So when I finished that program, I did go into the Peace Corps. Mm-hmm. So I went to Jamaica, West Indies for 2 years, and I worked in two areas, one for physical disabled and one for the, you know, mentally, they call it mentally handicapped area there, because I had been sent down for the math program, and I thought, I didn't do well in new math, but for some reason, things happen, and during probably the last year of my undergrad years, I volunteered here in the south, you know, the southern area of Tucson, working with adults and teaching them basic math skills. And that took me into the Peace Corps. It was not my special ed degree that took me into that. So I spent 2 years there, and I think what I really did there was to hone in on skills that I really needed for some time in the future, meaning that I had always been described as very shy and quiet. No one would believe that today. But and so I said, I don't want to be like that. I want to be a little bit more assertive, do things for, you know, in terms of advocating for those who are not very well heard in many ways. So I found myself doing a lot of that. And I really came home strong in those areas. And then I did some traveling, which helped me a little bit more. Went into South America, visited Haiti and the Dominican Republic, and then came back home and entered into the teaching field in Pima County. First, as there's a special programs called Pima County Special Services, and they would they were really focusing on special needs areas. Mm-hmm. In those days, the schools, the local schools, did not really have special needs programs, so they contracted out to this county program, and I ended up in cells in the Don Nathan community for a year, and then moved to Marana, this school district, and spent 30 years in the Marana school district teaching, all the way from high school all the way down to first grade. And during that time, I think there was a lot of, I think, stereotypes and my own sense of missing pieces in terms of working with Native students, that I wasn't trained to work with Native students. And it's sort of a misguided kind of idea that because I'm Native, I would know how to teach them. Right. We're very diverse. So the cultural, you know, ways and knowledge is different.
Hopi is different from Tono Hold'em, it's a totally different approach to some things.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But the Don Nathan and the Hopi, though, are linguistically linked.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So we're talking with Dr. Sheila Nichols. She is after all this journey, she's a professor, full professor at the University of Arizona in teaching, learning, and social-cultural studies, American Indian studies, second language acquisition, and teaching. And so you've really taken this academic journey, and now there's a new center. U of A has been a forerunner in getting Native languages and keeping them alive and so forth for years, for decades. But there's this new initiative from the U.S. Department of Education, a $1.7 million grant to kind of help a couple of states in the West work on what's called the West Region Native American Language Resource Center. So tell us a little bit about that project and how that all came about.
I've been involved with the American Indian Language Development Institute since the 1990s. you know, that was my master's journey mm-hmm. into language, because when I went back for my master's degree in American Indian Studies at the U of A, that became an opening there that made me realize that I had actually shifted as well in my language. Even though Hopi was my first language, I realized at the ALDI that I couldn't speak it anymore, mm-hmm. and I also couldn't think in it. I always understood it. And that really was the turning point for me there at ALDI to look into this.
It's interesting how people think in their native language. They tend to think in their native language, and then if, you know, speaking English, then you translate it to English, mm-hmm. but you think in the Hopi language, and if you lose that and mm-hmm. you start thinking in the English language, then the tendency to lose the Hopi language goes fairly quickly, right?
It does. I mean, even now, since I don't have very many people to speak to on a daily basis, there's words that I noticed. I just went home, came from Hopi a couple days ago, and there are just words that I'm still thinking, like, I can't remember that word.
Right.
If the brain is a muscle,
right.
So it atrophies. So if you don't use it, you lose it.
Right.
But it also has memory, so you can bring it back.
So this center then is a collaboration with some other states, and the $1.7 million from the Department of Education is an effort to try and revitalize and maintain these languages, the Hopi language, the Tohono O'odham, and other languages, to try and keep them alive and teach them to younger people, correct?
Yes. So this grant actually has been a way for them to align with the Native American Languages Act of 1990. Mm-hmm. That Dr. Ophelia Zepeda was one of the key drafters of that mm-hmm. act. So this particular grant supports that, and all the institutes across the nation that have been put in place doing this work, ALDI being one of them. It's been in this area for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it has done a lot of work, and in terms of what it's already done, this grant really just expands and allows us to support more communities in a more substantial way in terms of material resources, support. Like currently, the goals are, you know, support and advocacy.
Right.
There's also training to implement whatever programs that they have in terms of fitting their needs. So yes, this grant is a way that we can build on what ALDI has done for the past 40 years in a more concrete way in terms of and maybe tangible way too.
And it's kind of a regional thing, because we have Arizona, California, Nevada, and Utah involved in this and their programs. And Dr. Zepeda has been really active in this for many, many years. And she's Tohono O'odham. And then you with Hopi. And this is really important. Even the university has made a huge effort to try and align the recognition of sacred lands mm-hmm. and so forth. So mm-hmm. what a fascinating journey that you've had. We really appreciate you being here with us today on Jump in Tucson. We'd like to have you back and learn some more about how the outcomes of the program are later mm-hmm. on in the future.
Yes, we're establishing it right now, so
great.
I'll have more to say.
Thank you, Dr. Sheila Nichols with the University of Arizona. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. If you'd like to be interviewed on a Friday show or a Monday show, give us a call or go to jumpintucson.com and tell us your story, and maybe you'll be live on the air. We appreciate you being here, Dr. Nichols, and we will hopefully see you again in the near future. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley. This is Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice.